when you're managing projects, what you want to do is you want to manage the process, make sure the process is being followed rather than managing people. Because if your people are trained on what the process is and what the expectations are, then you don't have to worry too much about the person. Because if they follow the process, the results should be consistent because the process was already developed to produce that result. And that's why you don't have to manage results and you don't necessarily need to manage the person. What you do is you need to manage the process, make sure the process is getting followed. And when it's being followed, then you know you're getting a consistent result and your team is also performing consistently. And so you don't have those two issues to worry about.
Welcome to the Influence and Scale podcast, where content creators, marketers, and entrepreneurs learn how to increase their influence and scale their business using content marketing. My name is Tyler Basu, and alongside my business partner, Chuck Anderson, we'll be sharing proven strategies to help you grow your audience, create great content, and generate more traffic, leads, and sales for your business. Thanks so much for joining us. Now let's dive in. Welcome, welcome. Thanks for being here. We are jumping into the topic of delegation today, how to effectively delegate, give tasks to your team. This is a timely topic for us because we've had a busy last few weeks, busy in a good way because we've gotten started with a handful of more clients on the agency side, but that's also forced us to have to hire more people and revisit the processes and training that we had for our existing team. So we're going to share some of the insights that have come out of us having to document everything that Chuck and I want to take off our plate. I feel like we kind of go through this in cycles, like every few weeks, as more stuff gets added to our plate, we have to revisit what we want to take off of our plates. Do you feel the same way about that, Chuck? Or has your calendar been filling with activities that you need to get out of your calendar again?
Well, yes. And that is always happening. And I think one of the things that we've been very lucky with, if luck's the right word, is that we've been seeing an increase in business. We've been having more and more customers come on and we've been onboarding a lot in the last month. And the interesting challenge to that is that now the tasks of fulfilling on those clients and also, you know, kind of scheduling it in such a way where you don't have all these really big tasks all happening at once. And also to be able to kind of look forward and see, okay, what parts does it make sense for me to do? What parts does it make sense for you to do? Usually at a higher and higher level we're starting to do. And then what is getting delegated to who? And when does that need to be done? And so that is the big challenge. And you know, as we grow, we identify new areas that we need to delegate, sometimes a little bit after we need to identify it. So yeah, it's an interesting challenge to stay ahead of so that our team is always doing things ahead of when we need them to do.
Yeah. And it's easier said than done to know exactly like when you need to hire help, because you can't always predict your growth 100% accurately. In fact, we feel very fortunate to even be dealing with this problem because we've had clients and I have colleagues and friends that are literally like laying off people and slowing things down right now from a marketing and hiring perspective. But in our case, it's the opposite. We're ramping up because we're helping people sell stuff online. That's, you know, that's a needed service right now. And so the demand for the jobs and for delegating is there. But the trick, as you alluded to, Chuck, is like being able to plan how far in advance of when you actually need certain tasks taken off of your plate. Like you got to work backwards from when you want that to actually happen and start hiring before you need that. Or what happens is you become the bottleneck, you start falling behind on some things, and then you're scrambling to hire somebody on short notice and possibly, you know, skip some steps in your hiring or your vetting process and choose the wrong person. Because it can very well take several weeks, sometimes even several months, to really get a new team member onboarded and trained to the point where you trust them to fully own the thing that they're responsible for. And so if you're scrambling to get something off your plate on short notice, that puts extra pressure on the person that you've hired that's maybe not in their best interest and your best interest. So it's a kind of a juggling act where we all want to be growing. We don't always know how fast we're growing, or sometimes we're hit with a bunch of extra customers or clients or referrals, and then we got to like very quickly start hiring to delegate those tasks. But if you know, that's just part of being in business, I guess, right? It's not all steady, nice, smooth growth. Sometimes things just happen in cycles, where this is a cycle of fast growth and rapid hiring. And then there will be a cycle after that of let's update our processes, refine our processes, train our team before going through that cycle again. And that can happen several times throughout the year. Chuck, is there anything you want to add to that before we jump into the nitty gritty of actually like creating processes for our team?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things, you know, like I said earlier, we experienced a lot of growth last month, probably more than what we even expected. And it was very difficult to predict in that particular moment. We just signed some new partnerships, so we know we have lots more coming. So, you know, that kind of put us into action where we needed to grow. But being able to forecast, being able to look forward and say, this is coming. Because if you wait until you need it, then two things are going to happen. Number one, like you said, you're going to put pressure on someone to be able to perform in very short notice. I think number two is that it could potentially cost you money, because the type of person who could turn things around in short notice is going to have to be a higher skilled and maybe even a higher, more experienced type of person that might in the long run cost you more money than the type of worker that you could
train.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah. You know, my rule of thumb is to start the process 3 weeks before you need someone. You need time to be able to post the job and to receive applicants. You need then time to go through those applicants, talk to them, interview them, and make a decision on who you're either going to like shortlist or who you're going to hire. And then you need at least a third week now to train and onboard that person. If you're doing it sort of realistically and in a way that's sustainable for both you and the person, you're looking at three weeks lead time. And sometimes you're not lucky enough to have that amount of time. Sometimes it's much, much short notice than that. But that is the trick. That is the challenge.
Yeah, for sure. There's a couple of mistakes that I want to touch on that entrepreneurs make when they're in that process of delegating. Because if we can help them avoid these mistakes and just shape their mindset a little bit around delegating, you and I both know a lot of entrepreneurs are perfectionists and like control and have a really hard time giving responsibility to other people in many cases. So for those types, let's touch on some of the mistakes that you can make in that process of trying to find people and hire people and delegate tasks. And then we have a certain way of documenting tasks and creating checklists. And so we'll touch on that a little bit as well. For those of you that are like, you have people and they're doing stuff for you, but there's like gaping holes in your documentation of what they're doing and how they should do it. And that can create issues as well. But we'll hit on some of those mistakes. A big one, Chuck, I think, is thinking that you have to understand how to do every single thing that's involved in your business. Big mistake. This sends people down the rabbit hole of trying to learn how to like accomplish every single task across all the departments in their business so that they can understand how to do it before giving it to somebody else. And I think that's a big mistake, because then now all of a sudden you're expected to be the expert on every single process in your business. And I think that's just not realistic. Like, there's parts of our internal processes that I shouldn't touch. There's parts of it that Chuck shouldn't touch. And, you know, we're leaning on people who are good at that stuff to do it. Like, I wouldn't know how to edit a video, for example, but I know how to tell somebody what I want done to a video, but I don't know how to do a good job of editing a video. Chuck, why do you think this mistake occurs, that need for control, I guess? Why do you think that happens?
Well, I think there's a lot of conflicting, you know, advice out there. And, you know, one of them is that a good leader needs to be able to inspect what they expect, and that you really shouldn't ask people to do something that you haven't done yourself. Well, and I think that leads to the mistake, Tyler, that you're talking about. And I think where we have to kind of read into that a little bit is like, you don't need to be a video editing expert to be able to understand what you expect in terms of video editing. You understand enough of the process, Tyler, to be able to, you know, give guidance to the person who is highly skilled, and so that you get back really what it is that you're looking for. And I think a good leader does need to understand the processes, and also, you know, what are the expectations in terms of the amount of time that you are allocating to a particular task and deadlines that you're setting for your team. But at the end of the day, you are not smarter than your team. In fact, I always try to hire people who are smarter than me in that one particular area that we're hiring them for. And so again, understanding the process, understanding the output, so that our expectations are realistic, but not necessarily being the expert at that task.
Yeah, for sure. If you're going to delegate a specific process or set of tasks to somebody, I think the correct approach is for you to understand what you want accomplished. Okay, maybe what are the steps involved in that task, but not necessarily how to execute those steps. That's what the person you're hiring for, that becomes their responsibility. So should we have a high level understanding of all the tasks that are happening? Sure. Should we be able to get into the trenches and do every single task that's happening in our business? Probably not. Because again, it all comes back to everybody's core skill set, right? You as a marketing leader inside of your company, or as the entrepreneur or the CEO of your company, there's a certain set of skills that are required for that role. And getting into the trenches and doing a bunch of these other things, you don't necessarily need to have those skills, but you need to understand how to give that process to somebody else. And in the cases where you would have no idea how to do the process, but you've identified an outcome that you need delegated to somebody else, like, for example, paid advertising. Let's say you have no idea how to run ads or where to run ads or what platforms to do ads on, but you have a budget for advertising and you know that you want X number of clients or X number of leads from that budget. In that case, if you have absolutely no understanding of the process, you're finding somebody to do that for you. In that moment, you're delegating an outcome. And so the process becomes their responsibility. You can say to them, hey, this is the budget for what we want to accomplish here. We want to accomplish, leads for $5 or $10 or applications for $100, whatever the heck the outcome is. And I'm just using the example of paid advertising here. But if you can clarify the outcome that's required, you hire the person that has the skill set to accomplish that outcome and you let them do their thing. Big mistake here is trying to delegate both. If you try to give somebody a process and an outcome simultaneously, when push comes to shove, you got to pick one that they're responsible for. If you want them to be responsible for a result or an outcome, you probably shouldn't micromanage the process if that's not something you understand fully. And if you know how to get an outcome and you've documented that process, then you can go ahead and delegate that process to somebody because you've taken responsibility for the outcome. Does that make any sense, Chuck? Do you want to add to that?
It does. It reminds me of something one of my early business mentors taught me, and that is that when you're managing projects, what you want to do is you want to manage the process, make sure the process is being followed rather than managing people. Because if your people are trained on what the process is and what the expectations are, then you don't have to worry too much about the person. Because if they follow the process, the result should be consistent because the process was already developed to produce that result. And that's why you don't have to manage results and you don't necessarily need to manage the person. What you do is you need to manage the process, make sure the process is getting followed. And when it's being followed, then you know you're getting a consistent result and your team is also performing consistently. And so you don't have those two issues to worry about.
That's a good point. So when it comes to actually following processes, what we recommend, every business should have this, but they should have standard operating procedures or SOPs for all of the processes inside of their business. And how deep and how granular you get with these SOPs is up to you. And it also depends on whether you are the one developing every single step-by-step task that you want somebody to follow, or you just at a high level tell them what needs to be accomplished. And then you have your team member document every task that's involved and how they're accomplishing that outcome or that result. And the ultimate goal here is to have documented processes for everything that's happening inside of your business so that you're not relying on people that come and go. And if somebody comes and then a few months later they go, or a few year, a year or two later they go, and they take their knowledge of their role with them, then there's, they're leaving a huge gap there inside of your business, because you were relying on the person, but you never extracted the process that that person was responsible for and put it on paper. So that's why SOPs are so important, and they kind of become the secret sauce of your business, because, you know, you may hire people, fire people, people will come and go. There's a lot of change that can happen in the people, but the processes that are created and updated and documented along the way, those get to stay. And that becomes kind of the secret sauce of your operating manual for the different departments of your business. So if you don't have any SOPs, I literally have a template for SOPs. So I've got like an SOP for my, for our SOPs. I know that's kind of geeky, but on that template, and this is, you know, any client that's been going through this process of they've had to start documenting stuff, I just give them this template and like as a starting point. And then they're, the people on their team get to start actually documenting what they're doing internally. And then lo and behold, they end up with all these written procedures for inside of their business. But on this SOP, we've got up at the very top, you give the task a name and outline the purpose of the task. I think it's really important that people understand why something is being done, not just what to do or how to do it. But if they understand why, like what's the outcome here, that gives them a little bit of the freedom and the wiggle room to update and refine the process as needed to ensure that that outcome is still being accomplished. So you got the purpose of the task, like what's the outcome expected of this? And then as kind of a resource section, you've got, you're listing any templates or frameworks or tools or logins to certain accounts that are required to accomplish the task. And then you have the step-by-step instructions for that task. At a minimum, written instructions. And if you get the chance to do a task yourself and record your screen, or you have the people on your team do that, you then you create some video training to supplement those written instructions. But those are like the main three parts of a standard operating procedure: the purpose of the task, the tools, the templates, the logins required, and then the step-by-step instructions. And going back to your point, Chuck, of if we know how to get a certain outcome, we've documented that process, and we got to get it out of your brain or get it out of my brain and put it on paper. That's our first priority when we're hiring a new team member to take something off of our plate, is we document our process, we give it to them, they're responsible for it. If we don't know how to accomplish a certain process, in that case, we're hiring somebody to accomplish a certain outcome. We can give them the SOP and then ask them to document how they're accomplishing that outcome, because that's their expertise and not ours. Chuck, do you have any learnings from past experience with building out systems and processes and giving training to team members that you want to add to that?
Yeah, and this is something that I get constantly reminded of as well as we manage our team, because even with all of this documentation, we have the SOP in both a written form and a video form. And what can happen with your team is once they're through the training phase and once they've gone through the process numerous times and they start to get comfortable with it. And then what happens is they start to do things from memory versus following the process. And that's something as a manager, we really have to look out for, because when your team starts doing things from memory and not by following a procedural checklist, that's where mistakes can happen. That's where things can get missed. And so a great example is, you know, we have a number of different clients that we publish content for their social media marketing. And each one of them, while similar, have their little differences. And so we might do, you know, this for one client, but we might be doing something a little different for the other client. And so what can happen with your team is that they go on a little bit of autopilot and they're operating from memory, thinking, well, I just did this task for client A, so I must be doing the same thing for client B. And so one of the challenges that we've had to overcome in our business is to train our team to be referring to the implementation checklist and following the procedure for that individual client. So there's the overarching process of the task that they're doing, but then there's the finer points of the deliverables for each client. And so that was challenging in the beginning, and I think is a constant evolution. And again, you're dealing with people who we work on autopilot, right? And so for those of you who drive a car, think about the first time you ever drove a car. And when you get in there and you're nervous and you're adjusting the steering wheel and you're adjusting the mirror and you do that 360 walk around of the car to make sure everything's ready. And then when you finally feel ready, you pull out of the driveway and you drive and you're thinking about everything you're doing. And then fast forward to today, if you drove somewhere yesterday, I bet once you got in the car, got to your destination, you get there and you don't even remember driving, right? Like it's so autopilot. And I think with following these processes, we have to be very conscious that humans want to operate on autopilot. And so to then manage them. And the check-in is, and this is where we do a lot of work with our weekly team meetings to make sure people are following the checklist and not sort of operating from muscle memory. And so when you do that, you're going to avoid a lot of inconsistencies that could potentially pop up in your process.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a really good point. And I think one of the ways we've helped combat that is our team members, they understand how to do their tasks. But as you mentioned, for each client, there's certain nuances. And so we've had to go back and like update the templates that the team is referring to for each client so that they're not working off of the memory of the very first template that was created for that task that was like just meant to be a reference that needed to be customized for each client or for each project, but actually working off the customized ones. And if they can from memory do a task, great, but they need the system in place to make sure they're doing the correct task and the correct step for the specific project or for the specific client. And so that's just something to be mindful of. One big mistake here, and I think we can leave this as the last piece of advice or message to wrap up on this topic for today, is to protect the culture that you have internally by making sure that your team understands that it is okay to make a mistake. The bigger mistake is to not flag it or learn from it or have some room in place to debrief, to document learnings, to update processes, and have a way of communicating with each other. What we absolutely don't want is for mistakes to get made and for nobody to notice or for people to notice and not raise their hand and flag that. So making sure that whoever you're working with knows that you, although you may have high standards and high expectations, there's got to be some margin for error and the expectation for the occasional mistake and forgiveness in that when it happens, so that we can all learn together and get better together as a team and not try to hide from or cover up or ignore mistakes as they're made. What do you think about that last point, Chuck? Do you want to add to that?
So important. And one of the things that we've been working very hard with in our culture is encouraging our team members to speak up and to ask questions. And if they don't know something, if they forgot something that maybe they should have already known, or if a mistake was made and they need help to fix it, it's better that they speak up and let us know and help them to resolve the problem than to pretend it didn't happen or sweep it under the carpet or that.
Yeah.
And I think it happens a lot. I know in teams that I was involved with in previous organizations where team members were fearful of the leader or feared the repercussions or feared being fired. That's where you tend to get some of that dishonest stuff happening, not intentionally, but it's really just self-preservation. They think that, oh no, I made a mistake, I'm going to get fired. And so they try to solve their own problem, which is great, you know, for people to solve their own problems, but is it being done in a way that preserves the quality and the integrity of the output of that process? And so we try to encourage our team members to speak up, let us know when something didn't work out right, at least we're informed, or do we need to get involved in solving the problem? But as long as we can keep that open communication without them fearing the repercussions, I think that really adds an element to the quality of the output, because now everyone cares about the outcome and they're not fearing negative repercussions from making mistakes.
Yeah. On that note, giving people specific instructions on how to deliver that communication. we made that mistake as well of, you know, taking a few days to see that a team member sent us a message or whatever. It's like, so now not only do we ask them for communication, we've given them instructions on, okay, if something's urgent, you use this method of communication. If something, because we don't want something to go a few days being ignored. So I think you gave them a rule, Chuck, of like, if you don't hear a response within 24 hours or something like that, I want you to reach out to me this way. Because if you've got multiple tools, you're checking emails, you're checking Asana, you're checking Basecamp, Slack, whatever the case is, that's four or five different places people can send you a message. Messages get missed. It can happen, right? So I think just as a final note there, yes, encourage communication, but also provide guidance on how you want to receive that communication, depending on its like urgency or its priority.
Absolutely. And that has made a huge difference. And so early on in the training process with our team, little things like that were happening where messages were being left. It wasn't clear whose responsibility it was to jump on those messages. And there was messages being sent to multiple people. And so this person thought that person was responding and vice versa. And so giving them that framework of what do you do when you don't have what you need? Who do you go to? And if you don't get what you need, here's what you do in that so that you get what you need. And that has cleared up the problem and has improved communication within our team. Still being a 100% virtual team, we're working really well together as though we were all within the same office. So that's been a really helpful thing to implement.
Cool. Well, Chuck, I think we'll wrap up there. We hope this was helpful. If anyone has any questions for us about delegating to your team, if you want our template, our SOP template, just let us know. Happy to share that. But yeah, we hope this was helpful for you and just do your best to like not feel that you have to be the expert on every single process or task in your business. The way that you scale is you got to get good at figuring out where there's a bottleneck, hiring somebody to help come in and alleviate that bottleneck by taking on some responsibility and delegating to them effectively. That's how you scale faster. Like the more people you've got on your team, the more output is being produced for your own business and for your customers and for your clients. And all of a sudden you've got this system that can run without you because it's not just you trying to do everything. So we'll wrap up there. We hope this was helpful and we'd love to hear from you if you have any questions on this topic. Thanks so much for listening to the Influence and Scale podcast. If you're enjoying the show, make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. And for show notes, links to resources mentioned, or to learn about how our agency can help you implement a profitable content marketing strategy, visit influenceandscale.com/podcast.